This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
Folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTKA.com, live here inside the MDN studio. Sam Webb, Matt the Miz Misler on the other side of the glass, doing a great job as he always does. Love, I walked in, I was like, man, Miz, I'm just happy to see you, man. It's my guy. And running the ones and twos while Ira is out on a brief hiatus, joining us in the MGo Blog Roundtable. The venerable one, as I call him, Craig Ross. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. My wife said the only reason I do this show is because I'm like coming to a hobo convention, and I'm like GQ compared to the rest of the guys around here.
So, wow!
What are you wearing today?
I've never even met Mrs. Ross.
How?
Don't say that.
You're wearing like a hoodie.
I only have a little bit of slobber on.
That's like that. How old is that hoodie?
It looks old. It's old.
It's like 50 years old.
About that.
All right.
I'm gonna talk to your wife.
And Brian Cook from MGo Blog. Brian, how you doing this morning?
Hello.
So Michigan dropped last night. Every game.
Hit a shot.
Every game is important. I know. I hear you. Every game is important, but home games, they feel like they're even more crucial this year than they are normally, and they're always important. But as tough as it is to win on the road this year, you got to protect home floor, especially against teams where you feel like on paper you should beat this team. And they fell last night 72-63 to Penn State.
Yeah, and it was Eric Shapiro on Twitter said, this game was a very make or miss league kind of game, and I agree with that. Like, you know, they come out and they hit a bunch of mid range jumpers. They hit a three from Stevens, who's like a 25% 3-point shooter,
yeah.
And you're just like, all right, well, you know, if this continues going this way, this is going to be a good defensive game for Michigan because they're not going to keep hitting these shots at this rate. And they didn't, because they didn't hit all of them, but they did hit nearly 50% in the mid-range, and that's not really their jam as a team. And then Michigan goes, like, what, 3 for 1 million from three again?
5 of 28.
5 for 28.
Yeah, so, like, God, jeez.
Yeah.
And the good looks. I mean, I guess
for me,
it's what were the quality? Were you settling? Are you settling for threes that weren't good looks? And I just didn't feel that way watching them yesterday. They just could not throw it in the ocean. And you looked at your 3-point shooters in the rotation, and I'm looking at Franz Wagner and Eli Brooks, and they were combined 2 for 13,
yep,
last night. And that just, you know, I feel like as we look at this team without Isaiah Livers, and I'm curious about you guys' take, because I mean, we focused a lot on defense these last 5 or 6 games, and rightfully so. As you know, post defense this week, it was a perimeter defense. They leave a lot to be desired on that end of the floor. And yet I found myself saying last night, even with Myron Jones going off and then Curtis Jones Jr. coming out of nowhere.
18 points in the second half.
With 18 points in the second half, as bad as that is, I was like, man, I feel like they've been worse defensively. If they could just hit a few of these open shots, and I feel like Isaiah Livers could hit a few of those open shots, that maybe some of these winnable games would turn out different. I think back, guys, to, because I made the remark after the game, you know, they can't mount offense consistently enough to pull some of these games out with as bad as the defense has been. So it was bad last night, and yet you hit a few open looks. You can overcome it. You look at the Minnesota game, and I look at the last 5 minutes of the first half of that game. Remember, they were up 30-19, and they went 0-for-6 down the stretch. And then the last 5 minutes of the game, or last 4 minutes of the game, they went 1-for-6 down the stretch. So 1-for, and the crucial points of the game, they could not hit a shot. And, of course, Brick City against Michigan State. I just don't think they're consistent enough right now. And I'm trying to find ways in which they can find some consistency with the rotation in its current composition.
Yeah, I mean, last night's game was interesting. As Brian said, we're down 9-2 in the first couple minutes. They made four shots. Three of them were crappy shots, but they went in anyway. And then we miss, Franz misses a point blank layup.
A bunny
on a really nice pass from X. But the game stabilizes, and they do start to miss some shots, and Michigan starts playing a little better, and it gets to be 21-16. We're up. So we had a nice long run. Mm-hmm. And then on the next 11 possessions, we turn it over five times. We have five turnovers and 11 possessions and some whoppingly bad ones, kind of pointless, unforced mm-hmm. turnovers. A couple of them lead to runouts going the other way. And, you know, the next thing you know, we're well down in the, or not well down, but we're down a chunk, 8, 9, 10 points in the game. So it just seems like every game in this stretch has had this, you know, these few minutes where we're like turning it over, taking, not so much taking bad shots, but some of that, and are just missing streaks of shots.
So give me alternatives. Give me
livers back.
That's number one.
Short of that, I'm right there with you. Again, I don't think that he fixes all the problems, but he patches some holes. He helps patch some holes. But short of that,
get livers back.
What do you think? What could they possibly do? And broken record, guys. I don't want to make it sound like a panacea, but I've been impressed. At times with John Teske as a passer in the post. He had a skip pass last night where he found an open three. Was it Franz? Someone he found on a cross-court pass. It was missed, of course. But still, his ability to find cutters is not just about throwing it to the post and having him, you know, get shot attempts up. With his back to the basket, it's also you can run a little more offense through him and see if they can get some more quality offense that way.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say because, in the Minnesota game, even though Garza had 33, and a lot of that was not against...
You mean Iowa game?
Yeah, Iowa mm-hmm. game, excuse me. Garza had 33, but a lot of that was not against Teske, but... I think Garza had 33 on 27 or 29 shot equivalents, which is good, but Teske had 14 on 9 shot equivalents, and he had 7 assists. So that 7 assists is a lot for a center.
Yeah, it is.
But what do you need to get an assist? You need someone to hit a damn shot.
Well, but a lot of them are layups. A lot of them are layups on guys cutting to the basket. Yeah. So
Penn State isn't nearly as bad on defense as Iowa.
True.
So mm-hmm. they sagged off Simpson. They turned Simpson into a guy who took a ton of shots, and that's just not a great situation for Michigan. I mean, Simpson had a pull-up two, which I think he might have hit one of in his career, and they did a really good job of funneling shots to both him and Teske from three that they were just willing to let Michigan mm-hmm. have. Now, and then you go to Eli Brooks. Eli Brooks has had two great games against Iowa because Iowa's a bad defense. But, like, once he gets a guy in his grill, he really does not have a lot of options. So that's a third guy who's really not a threat against a good defense. And that's, too many?
Right.
So it's just a rough situation, and Michigan was able to kind of skate past that early in the year because Brooks was playing very well, and they had Isaiah Livers. And Livers was just not a survivable loss for this team. And I think every Michigan fan, as soon as that happened against Presbyterian, they just kind of felt something. Mm-hmm. And they were like, this is not good.
This is bad.
This is bad.
This is definitely bad. One guy said, well, you're making it. He's not Blake Griffin. He doesn't have to be Blake Griffin.
I mean, he is the top scorer on this team.
He's the best three-point shooter, one of the best guys in the league. And when you I looked up the stat in these recent games. I think Michigan is like 25% from some awful shooting percentage from three in renewed, I'll call it renewed conference play.
In the Big Ten, I think we're 27%, 28% on
the
season.
I'm just talking about this second run. You know, so they played the two Big Ten games earlier in the year. Since the new year and the Big Ten resumes, they've just been abysmal, especially without Livers. And you got to feel like he would make a few of those, right? That's not far.
Well,
far-fetched.
He
makes a few of those, and then he also has gravity so that other guys are more open. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's, you know, it's just not a situation that Michigan was able to cope with. Because, I mean, they lost three guys that should have been on the wing in this team, right? They lost Poole, they lost Iggy, and they lost Jalen Wilson. So you're down to, okay, we've got a couple guys who can start, and then beyond him, it's like, all right, well, we're going to put a center out there at the four, which is not a great solution.
Right. So, hey, look, I'm not out here saying that you know, Teske in the post is the answer. It's going to solve all the problems. But you're looking, you got to try something, right?
It's their best answer right now. I mean, in the last two games, he's 7-for-10, you know, on post touches, or 7-for-10 on post shots. You know, that's 1.4 points per shot. I think that works out okay. You know,
I just wonder about if he has the mentality to, like, be a 30% usage guy.
If he did, maybe they would be doing it. You're probably onto something. Maybe he doesn't, but I don't think you really have a choice. I think you got to force it. Yeah. You got to try something. I mean, what do you think about what people are saying? Why not give Cole Badgerman a few minutes?
Why not at this point? Yeah, I mean,
I have a question about that, though. Are you guys 100% sure that they've burned his red shirt?
Yeah.
You're sure? Because otherwise it doesn't make sense.
To not give him some minutes.
Yeah, I mean, because he is 5-for-5 from two. You'd at least think you'd want him to miss a shot or two before you give up on him. And I think he's 1-for-2-for-3. I think he's missed one shot and he's made his free throws. So you'd think that you would put him out there. I mean, can he be a worse defensive option than Nunez?
No.
Then why? That's my opinion.
Theoretically possible.
I mean, I don't think it's theoretically even possible. So how come we're not seeing him at all? Unless I don't know if the redshirt rules changed in basketball some or the
I've heard of.
Well, when Bohannon shut it down, that was like the last game he could shut it down. So whenever he shut it down, is the cutoff.
Well,
so Bajum has played after that. His red shirt is
I don't believe he has.
I have to look in.
I don't believe he has.
And see.
Did he not play against like Presbyterian? I'm pretty sure he did.
I've got the.
I have to pull up the log. Sure, but at any rate, that is not an unreasonable question to ask or point to make. With if he can't be any worse,
I mean,
why not?
And he's making all his shots in
the limited time he's had.
At
this point, he's got to be sitting on the bench being like, what do I got to do? I got two legs. I got two arms. Put me in, coach.
Right. You know, it feels like this is now or never time. You know, if they don't get Isaiah Livers back soon, you know, then it becomes about playing for your tournament life. Is that too drastic to say?
I mean, they're shooting 1-for-1,000,000 from three with him on the bench. So, no, it's not.
No, I mean, this is a crisis time whether Livers comes back or not. I mean, Livers is going to come back, and you don't know how, you know, a guy comes back from injury. It isn't axiomatic that he just starts at right where he was at. And so, no, Illinois, I think, is a better team than Penn State. The Illinois team I saw this week look like a better team than Penn State, and so you don't have Livers on Saturday. Now I don't know what your record is, 2-6 or something like that in the Big Ten. I mean, now you really start to have to go on a roll and win some games, or you're done.
Yeah,
forget the Big Ten championship, that ain't happening. But I mean, I'm talking about getting into the NCAA.
Yeah, he can't come back soon enough. It's like, he obviously you don't want to put him in any long term, take any long term risks with him. But time is of the essence with regard to his return, because they just can't do anything consistently right now. They can miss consistently. Yeah. Like,
they can generate open shots.
They can't make them.
I know. Yeah.
They can't make them consistently. So. Yeah. Which is a problem, to say the least. Guys, we definitely have a lot more to dive into. I guess I'll ask you one more basketball question. You know, there is some talk we had mentioned before about Dave DeJulius getting some of Eli Brooks's minutes. How about Dave DeJulius as a guy who is facilitating the offense more when he's on the floor as opposed to being off the ball?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, you've got to – if that's the case, then you're relying on Simpson as a shooter on the outside, which is tough.
Yeah. Or play Dave and Eli together a little bit.
Does that make it better? I don't know.
I'm giving you questions from Twitter.
From Twitter? Come on, man.
Hey, we got some folks that think X is the biggest problem with the team right now.
I mean, I'm not saying that the fact that he can't shoot is not a problem. Like, we saw it in the Penn State game. When you put a bunch of stuff on X's plate, his efficiency is not great. But I don't see a way that it gets better by taking the ball out of his hands.
I agree with that 100%.
I agree with that, too.
I mean,
I just needed somebody else to say it.
I mean, right now, X is probably still the best player, the strongest player we've got on the court. When you look at defense, ability to create something on offense, I mean, he's pretty much what we got. And so I don't see getting X off the court or getting the ball out of his hands as any sort of a solution.
Yeah, it sounds like they can't do much but hope and pray.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like listening to you guys.
I mean, you don't have any ideas.
I sure don't. Other than the Teske piece.
I think Teske should be getting more touches. I watched three games. Are we have to do a break now? Or
go ahead.
I watched three games Wednesday night and other Big Ten games, and I thought, wait a minute, this doesn't look anything like the games I've watched all year. I think I watched Maryland, Northwestern. I don't even remember what I watched. Purdue, someone, and the reasons why they were different was all of a sudden road teams were getting a fair whistle, which I hadn't seen all year. And my first thought was, maybe this is all changing all of a sudden. And of course, last night, the first half we were 0-for-0 from the free throw line. I think we're the first team this year in the Big Ten season at home not to get a free throw in a half. And so at that point in our last five quarters, we were 61-11 down in free throws.
How much of that do you attribute to bias whistle versus style of play?
Most of it is style of play.
Michigan
is running out.
Agree with
a guy who in Simpson who doesn't go into you to get to the basket. You know, he has a hook, but he's not going to force contact for you and try to get it up over your arms. Eli Brooks is a jump shooter. You know, Wagner has some potential as a driver, but mostly he's a jump shooter right now. Like, most of this is the fact that this is a John Beilein recruited team, and a John Beilein recruited team that's down like the guys who would actually get to the bucket last year. So it's mostly his style of play, and you can see that because Michigan, if you just look at their home games, they're not getting many free throws.
Well, yeah, that's a fair commentary. I don't think I actually agree with it, or I don't agree with it in whole. I mean, first of all, Northwestern is getting more free throws than Michigan is. Never has a team in the Big Ten ever taken the ball to the basket weaker and to a lower percentage than has Northwestern, and yet they're still getting more free throws than Michigan. I don't know. I mean, I know in the Beilein area, I felt like Michigan got, by and large, a pretty fair whistle. And I think in the Big Ten had evolved to allowing road teams a chance. But the Iowa game was an atrocity of officiating.
It was.
I mean, we outscored them by 16 points from the floor and still lost. This goes back to the old days where Big Ten pro wrestling looked like, you know, I mean, Big Ten refereeing looked like pro wrestling in cage matches. I mean, and you had to have a chance. You had to be up 20-25 on the floor against the team to have a chance to win. And that's what the Iowa game looked like. And to a large extent, that's what the Minnesota game looked like. I mean, those two games are like obscene in terms of the quality of the officiating. And it isn't just, and Juwan pointed this out in his press conference. He said, wait a minute, you know, in the Iowa game, we outscored them in the paint.
Mm-hmm.
We have the ball in the paint as much or more than they do. We're just not getting a call. And I think he was absolutely right about that. And you ask me why? I have no idea why. But the whole spigot turned off Wednesday night for some reason in the Big Ten. I didn't even recognize how the games were being officiated Wednesday night, and it accrued again last night, which wasn't a game that Michigan lost because of officials, not even close. It was a game because, as I agree with Brian, we just couldn't shoot the ball. That's what it came to. But still, there's something weird going on when over five halves, it's 61-11 from the line. I mean, that ain't just style of play, because you can't find that with Northwestern or the teams that don't take the ball to the hole at all. And we do, I mean, take it to the basket some.
I
know you disagree, but it's okay.
They take it to the basket a little, but, like, who on this team is a guy who's going to try to finish through contact and get fouls? It's not Teske. Mm-hmm. It's not Simpson. It's not Wagner. Like, John's a little bit, but the free throw rates of the guys on the team seem about right. The particular issues about, you know, fouls at Iowa, I agree with that. Mm-hmm. But, like, as a team, this is a team that should be in, like, the 300s in terms of getting free throws. Just look at the personnel. Well,
that's what they are. That's for sure.
Yeah, I agree with Brian on this with Craig. This is coming from a guy who is awfully critical of officials and definitely was critical of them in the Iowa game. But I do think that style of play is pretty predictive when it comes to Michigan's free throw rate this season. They just don't have a lot in the way of rim attackers on this roster. But we need to get to a break. As we do, I want to prepare you, Craig, for the next segment, because we got a question for you. I said, ask Craig about, because we were talking about this Kansas State brawl, and yeah. Dick Vitale was going off
Luke
about,
oh,
it's the worst thing I ever
asked
happened.
You about Luke Whitty. That's
exactly.
Minnesota.
They said, hey, ask Craig about the 1972 brawl, Minnesota and Ohio State. Yeah. Ask him about it. So we'll have you give us a history lesson. Yeah. We come back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, The Ticket. And we're back here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. So I mentioned to you before we went to the break, Craig, we got a question from a couple of people. As a matter of fact, we were talking about the Kansas State brawl. And, you know, obviously D'Souza picks up a stool like he's going to swing it. An assistant coach comes and stops him.
Shouldn't D'Souza be out for the year, I assume?
I do not think that would be too severe a punishment. But this is one of the worst things I've ever seen, people have been saying. And a couple of listeners said, hey, ask Craig. They specifically ask Craig about 1972 Minnesota Ohio State and that brawl. That is the brawl that a lot of people point to and saw it as maybe the worst they'd ever seen. What about you?
Yes, it was. I was in Boston in graduate school at the time, so I wasn't in Ann Arbor, wasn't in the Midwest to see it live. I saw some clips. But it was a big deal nationally, and a center at Ohio State, a 7-footer named Luke Whitty, who was reminiscent. He might be a John Teske type guy. I mean, he was that sort of a player, a good, decent player, and got into it with some of the Minnesota players, and two of them started stomping Whitty when he was on the ground. Their names, I think, were Corky Behagen, and the other guy was Taylor, maybe Ron Taylor. And I think Whitty ended up breaking a jaw. I think he ended up losing his season. And it spawned other sub-fights, including Dave Winfield. Who was on the Minnesota team, who threw several punches. And a guy named Jim Brewer was involved with it, who was a second-round pick in the draft, I believe, for the Cavaliers. Interestingly enough, Brewer played then with Whitty with the Cleveland Cavaliers. The coach... I think the coach at Minnesota, Bill Musselman?
Bill Musselman.
Okay, he had come from Ashland College and had won a small college championship at Ashland College and had a reputation back in Ohio as sort of on the edge, a reputation that carried over in the NCAA because I think his teams always ended up in trouble for one reason or another. And I think he later then went to even coach the Cavaliers. I think they fired Chuck Daly at the Cavaliers in deference to Bill Musselman.
Either that or the other way around.
Yeah, maybe the other way around. At any event, my history on this may be a little off. But Musselman's teams at the NCAA always seemed a little problematic.
I mean,
but it was a very bad fight.
You watch the clip. So Whitty is fouled really hard.
Yeah.
And then when they go to help him up.
Yeah, knee him.
He just kneed in the nethers.
Yeah.
And then the melee ensues after that.
And Whitty ended up losing, I think, the season with a broken jaw, is my recall.
Is that from the stomp?
It was from the stomp, I think, when he was on the ground. So, I mean, it was the worst. That's probably the worst fight I've seen on a basketball court. But I did not see it live. I don't know exactly what precipitated it, but it was an ugly event. But this Kansas State thing was not pretty either. That sort of reminded me more of the thing in Detroit.
Yeah, D'Souza has to be one of the weakest mentally anyway guys I've seen on the back. He got that upset because a guy, they're up 22, and a guy rips him and goes for a layup. Let him score.
Yeah.
And then you win by 20. And no one is thinking you got shown up for that. But somehow, some way, he thought it would have shown him up. So he blocks it and stands over him. And there's a melee. And he gets ready to pick up a bench. Or he does pick up a stool.
He does pick up a chair. Yeah.
He does pick up a chair. And
when does Snoop Dogg come with his dancers dressed up like chairs?
Yeah, with his money shooter. With his money shooter as well.
Like the girls are dressed up like chairs. Got a video of Bill Self. With chairs on him. I don't know what's going on.
He had stripper poles.
Big chain with a chair on it.
He came to the game, or he came to the event with stripper poles. How you thought that was going to go any different with Snoop Dogg is beyond me.
It'll be like the umbrella video. That's the halftime of the next Kansas game. D'Souza will be president of that university by Thursday. This is Thursday.
And a guy who's already skating on thin ice playing college basketball anyway, I would not be surprised if that's the last we see of him on a college basketball floor. But I want to switch gears and get you guys' thoughts on another big development here in the last week, and that's Michigan football, rounding out its assistant coaching staff. Bob Shoup, longtime defensive coordinator, obviously goes back with Don Brown. So there's a pre-existing relationship there, but also coached for years with Josh Gattis, so has some guys he knows here on staff. And then Brian G. Marie, who we've talked about here a lot over the last couple of days. What do you guys think of Michigan's haul?
Well, I found out that there's two Shoups, which is why I turn on the television and they like show a coach and it's a Shoup, and I'm like, oh, I thought he was somewhere else. So, like, that's why. Because there's just infinite Shoups and Stoops. Shoups and Stoops. Shoups, Stoops, 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 Stoops. I don't really understand hiring Shoup because he's been a defensive coordinator for the past decade. And he's going to want to be a defensive coordinator immediately. So this seems like a one-year rental, which isn't – I don't know how that helps Michigan. It feels like hiring Jim McElwain again. Except I'm not going to make shark jokes. I mean, I could, but it wouldn't make much sense. So I'm kind of nonplussed about that one. I'm from what we hear about Gene Marie, that sounds like the kind of hire they should be making, and probably should have made it with both spots. But
you know, I guess with Shoup, where I find my optimism lying is his ability to influence strategy.
Okay, do we need that?
I think they could. I definitely think there's some tweaks that they made some tweaks last year.
Yeah.
In covering crossing patterns. I don't know who was the kind of architect of that. But you know, I could certainly use some instances where maybe the aggression is a little. Well, let's call it mitigated. Let's call it dialed back a bit.
But they're not actually that hyper-aggressive. So, I mean, they will blitz five guys sometimes, but most of this year, Michigan spent their time faking blitzes and running four guys, and one of them was Uche, so it worked out.
So when you looked at the struggles this year, you thought they were all personnel-based?
I mean, it's not all personnel-based when Ohio State is doing what they're doing to you. But I mean, especially because those like conversions on third and long, and where they throw a 2-yard pass and it goes for 50 yards, which happened like 3 times. so there's some issues there. I just kind of I wonder how much another guy like Shoup is going
to
help.
I just feel like, look, if there are strategic tweaks to be made, the odds of a guy like Shoup, who has defensive coordinator on his resume, has worked with Don Brown, successful defensive coordinator on his resume, has worked with Don Brown in the past, so it has been through the rigors, battle tested, mother approved, so to speak, that guy has a greater ability to influence strategy than, say, a Chris Partridge.
Yeah.
Or an Anthony Campanelli in his first year.
I mean, doesn't that
who
sound
doesn't
like
know a Don Brown?
Are defensive coordinators a problem?
I'm not saying it's a problem. I'm saying who is going to bring the more tangible ideas to the table that the defensive coordinator could be like, man, you know what? And has tried it.
Sure.
It's not even experimental. I've done this. It's not something I've heard from someone else. This is something I've done. Let's try this. I think that is going to have more weight coming from Bob Shoup.
I mean, that has to be right, doesn't it? Because, I mean,
what's the point otherwise?
Yeah, because Shoup isn't known as a recruiter. No one thinks this is a guy who's going to set the world on fire as a recruiter or change things. And the coaching staff has to know that. Harbaugh knows that. Brown knows that. I mean, they have a history with Shoup. I mean, particularly Don Brown. So it has to be they're saying, you know, this guy can help us in coaching players and in creating a defensive structure that makes the most sense given the talent that we have. And so it has to be that. It can't be any third thing. And so, and I believe that's why they went out then and got Brian Jean-Marie, who's known as a particularly good recruiter. And he's also been...
They lost two of their top guys, and they replaced him with one guy who might be a like-for-like replacement, and then a guy who's basically Al Borges.
But
like,
they... I'm sorry, Brian.
Because Borges didn't really recruit at Michigan. Right? Like, he would pick a quarterback.
Here's what I would say about Al. His biggest recruit was turned away. Say that.
Okay.
I can say the quarterback. The quarterback from Ohio, was he from Indiana? The hell was that guy's name?
Gunnar Keel. Okay, but Gunnar Keel flamed out.
But at the time, he was a big time quarterback.
Yeah, who had
that wanted to come. I can give you the history now. Now after the fact? So Gunnar Keel wanted to come, and Al had a commitment from Gunnar Keel.
Yeah, but was he going to be a better quarterback at Michigan than Notre Dame?
I don't know.
Because he was bad at Notre Dame.
I don't know. But my point is, at the time, he had that quarterback, and so that Shane Morris was committed. Sure. And so they went to Shane Morris. And
asked his blessing?
Such a hope move. Good Lord.
And so they turned away Al's guy.
Well, I mean,
he would have had Gunnar Keel, and he would have had Damian Harris. Those would have been his recruiting victories at Michigan.
But, you know, we're talking about a running back, and that's like everything else is a quarterback, and they didn't have a reputation as a recruiter. I kind of feel like he's probably only going to be here for 1 year because he's going to go be a DC somewhere else where he can get paid more money. And I just don't get it. This kind of feels like a helping out your bro moment.
See, I feel like Craig in this, that this is an attempt to get a seasoned vet that you feel like can help you come up with some different answers to the things that are giving you problems out there.
It has to be what they believe, because nothing else makes any sense.
So I
prefer more continuity, I guess, because I mean, Michigan's just going to be back replacing this guy next year probably. So it's kind of like...
Yeah. Right. Brian Jean-Marie, though, with Shoup, and look, I don't want to pigeonhole the guy and say that he can't recruit Penn State guy, and they are
just because he never has.
here's my reluctance to do so. Ohio State fans were saying the same thing about Ed Warner. They were like, oh, he's a really, really good coach, but he can't recruit. He's terrible. He's a really good position coach, but he can't recruit at all. He's a zero in recruiting. He won't bring anything to the table, yada, yada. And all he's done is come in here and recruit well.
Yeah, so you're talking about Ohio State fans, and you were talking that coaches are saying this about Shoup, that he's not much of a recruiter.
Oh, no, no. I was talking about our 24/7 community colleagues.
Because, yeah, that's where
this Well, if you're talking about Ohio State journalists, you're talking about Ohio State fans. I can't make that any more clear. There's really no differentiation. You got that mod sticker on Bucknuts? That just means that you're like the Buckeye guy of the message board.
There are similar folks from Penn State who say the same thing about Shoup. Okay. That he's not going to bring much to the table of recruiting. And I am hesitant to say that that is definitely going to be the case based on the experience with Ed Warner, who has been much better than advertised. But on paper, if the recruiting reputation that we've heard about is anything close to accurate, you've got to get a guy who is lights out to go next to him.
But it's not like...
And that's what we've heard about.
A second lights out guy. I mean, you lost Partridge, you lost Campanelli, who were supposed to be your top two guys.
Yeah, and so I felt like there was a degree of redundancy there.
There's no such thing as redundancy in recruiting.
I think so.
No way.
I think there's redundancy
because
they're both New Jersey.
But you show up at someone's house and you got to be you, right? Like it's not.
And to be clear, it's not like I'm saying that they. Just because you added Campanelli, that he did nothing more than Partridge would have done on his own. I'm not saying that. He brought some more things to the table. I'm just saying having two guys in New Jersey isn't the same, and I wrote this, isn't the same as having two guys in, say, Florida, or two guys in Texas, or two guys in California. It doesn't take you as far to have two guys in Jersey.
Jean Marie, who's got connections
who
to
has
places.
Texas
and then you have a New Jersey guy, right?
Like, well, my question is, are they going to even let him recruit Texas? I mean, is that a fair question? I mean, because that's
because they haven't had much success there.
None.
I think when you hire a guy, you hire his connections too. Mm-hmm. So I think it behooves them to look past any lack of success in the past and say, hey, we got a guy who has deep ties in Texas, deep ties in Atlanta, deep ties in Florida.
Sure.
And let him go.
Yeah, you let him go. But also the return on that is going to be less than it would be if you hired a guy who was a really good recruiter in Ohio and Michigan. And they kind of had that guy on the hook and then they didn't come up with the spare change to give him a raise.
Well, see, I think the issue there, and this was my problem with the whole, like, it's not that Campanelli couldn't be replaced.
Right.
I was not saying that. But Michigan clearly prioritized Anthony Campanelli to the point where getting him locking him up was prioritized in terms of order of operations and money, in my opinion. I'm kind of speculating on that part.
Sure.
But I think the resources in terms of money and time was focused on Campanelli. And you thought you had him locked up. And for him to leave after that, after there are some viable options that were on the table, they come off. That, to me, was the biggest problem. It wasn't that you couldn't replace him. It's who else might you have moved on from or moved out of there because of your prioritization of Campanelli? Who else did you lose as a result of that? And I think he cost him some options with some other guys.
I mean, I don't understand why, even if you're putting some money on the table for Campanelli, this is Michigan football. And I can't imagine Ohio State football saying, like, oh, that assistant coach is going to be a little bit too expensive, so nah. Like, they're willing to triple Greg Madison's salary just to screw Michigan. And that that goes back to kind of the gap between the programs, right? One is willing to do anything, and I don't think Michigan should be willing to do anything. But one is single-mindedly focused on doing everything they can to beat Michigan, and Michigan is not.
So you would just have a blank checkbook.
I mean, not a blank checkbook, but if a guy needs a bump, then, I mean, you're going to get that money from the Big Ten Network next year.
But it sounds like they were willing to bump Campanelli
quite a bit. Campanelli was getting bumped. I mean, he was getting, and that to me was, I mean, that's why I said
it's about
it was,
the fit. We're talking about Steve Klingscale, who's the defensive backs coach at Kentucky, had a second and a third rounder. So he developed those guys, did a really good job with those. They left the team. Their pass defense was excellent again this year. He recruits Michigan. He recruits Ohio. And you can't go outside your salary structure a little bit to hire that guy. I mean, that's bad.
Yeah,
that's short-sighted by this program, and it's one of the reasons that they're in the spot they are.
I'm not sure Sam will disagree with you on that.
I would have definitely at the expense of Campbell. Well, that's just me.
Sure,
you know, he would have been my number one option, but that's just me. He's an established
position coach. They valued, who's done work with guys.
They valued Campy would have been the safety. So that's why you prioritize him. He would have been your safeties guy.
Yeah, but it's not really about
Campanelli
playing doing linebackers or safeties, right? Mm-hmm. It's about this guy looks like he's a dude, and he's a really clean fit for Michigan. So
yeah,
can't
you know this was
can't
one
get it done.
Yeah, this was one where you know they. You talked about continuity. I think that boosted the value of Campy.
They could have done the same thing with Campanelli and then decided that this guy was worth
I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. So you're saying, hey, you know, get Campanelli, pay him $750, whatever you're going to pay him. Yeah. And then, increase the salary pool
and you'll
get
another
guy.
Find the money somewhere because it goes up every single year. So it's a little frustrating. And yeah. I don't, like you.
I guess the majority of my frustration has to do with the guy telling you he's coming back and then.
Yeah, I mean, that's.
Screwing you.
But they had made a mistake before that happened.
Yeah. Craig?
Well. I don't have anything to add. I mean, I'm not expert on this stuff. I mean, I have to believe that the Brian Jean Marie hire is a good hire and that he'll recruit well, and that was a good choice for Michigan. And I think probably there was a reason why they hired Shoup, and particularly where they have a history with him. So I'm not critical of these hires, how it'll play out. I don't know. I guess we'll see. I mean, Brian's concerns are reasonable, particularly with Shoup.
Being a one-year guy?
Probably. It seems like he's probably a one and out, unless there's other things we don't know about.
There's a phrase for that.
What's that?
One and done.
One and done. Oh, okay.
Let's go to the phones and close things out with Jake in Ann Arbor. Jake, what's up?
I am pumped up. Two more awesome days till Michigan's next basketball game. Even though we lost, I think we're going to bounce back and shack the world and stuff. One game, one play, one moment at a time. And I want to give a big congrats for Michigan landing Jace Howard. And it's always a great day to be a Michigan Wolverine. I'll hang up and listen. Go blue. Win or lose, I'll hang up and listen. Go blue.
Thanks a lot for the call there, Jake.
Who's got it better than us?